I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about child care challenges, particularly now during the summer months when school is out and options are diminished. My guests are Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds of Early Learning Indiana, and Nicole Norvell from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. Please join the conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are going to be talking today about child care challenges, particularly now during the summer months when school is out and options can be difficult to come by. If you want to join this conversation, if you have questions or you want to share experiences, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds, both of Early Learning Indiana, and Nicole Norvell from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. I always screw that up, Nicole. I want to keep adding an S in when I say FSSA. It always it seems like I'm stuck on the S's forever. Anyhow, welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So let's talk about really kind of the scope of this problem. I mean, how many problems, maybe an overstatement, but the challenge here. You know, we have how many children who are, do we have any quantification, any numbers, Nicole, that tell us how many children are out there or families that have child care challenges during the summer months?
Well, certainly we can tell you how many children we're supporting through some federal and state funding streams, but that number isn't going to capture families who are private paying for their children to be somewhere. So for our program, we have around 45,000 children throughout the state. Around a third of those are children who are school age, meaning that they're out of school for the summer and their parents are trying to identify somewhere for them to be that's safe and healthy and hopefully helps them learn through the summer months.
Sarah and Crystal, can you flesh that picture out? Because a lot of us obviously wouldn't qualify for state aid. But speaking of as a parent myself, I can remember figuring out what we were going to do when the school year ended when my kids were small was a challenge. Crystal?
Mm-hmm. Well, on a daily basis, we have a Brighter Futures hotline and referral call center that parents can call in and receive referrals for child care. And on any given day, they receive hundreds of calls from families looking for child care options, whether it's for school agers, preschoolers, infants, or toddlers. But, of course, that number seems to spike just a bit when school is out or soon to be out. So we try to help find those options and assist them. And Sarah also is available to provide some resources as far as summer camp is concerned.
What are the biggest challenges, Sarah, when it comes to trying to find adequate child care, particularly during the summer?
I think maybe your location and what's available, because I think there's a lot of summer camps available through YMCA, Boys and Girls Clubs, Parks and Recs. Your churches offer certain programs and even other organizations. So some may connect with others around the community and do like half-day STEM summer camps, or they may do a Silly Safari summer camp and partner with other organizations. I think it just depends on what's available.
How much of it is, and I'll throw this to anyone, is also just the timing. I mean, it often struck me that, okay, the drop-offs for these camps often start after I am supposed to be at work. And, you know, the pickup time at the end of the day, even if it was an all-day camp, is before I'm supposed to be done at work. I see a lot of nods of affirmation around here. I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this, Nicole.
Well, so certainly as a parent myself, I empathize with that, right? Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of camps, though, who will offer some before and after care time. So dropping off early and being able to stay later, certainly that's something that is available. But it's a definite issue for parents a lot of times. And that's where I think, to Sarah's point, really learning about what camps are available in your area and what those hours are and how to choose the right camp is something that we highly encourage parents to utilize our folks here from Early Learning Indiana to help them with.
So Sarah, or Crystal, either one of you, you know, in terms of this, how do you go about, what's the process for deciding what is a good fit for you?
And I would say actually starting with, as Sarah said, looking at what options are available first and then checking into those options to find out if they have the hours that you're looking for. And based on those hours, is that something that you need? Does it work before you need to get to work and after, between those hours that you need to get to and from work? And also looking at what is available as far as what happens during the day and over a course of the day. And what's the staffing? What does that look like for those school-age programs? Because a lot of camps are utilizing teenagers to staff their camp. Mm-hmm. So looking at if that's a good option for you, do you think that's something that your child would work for your child? Just knowing exactly what that camp has to offer and if it works for you and your family.
Sarah, how do you go about the quality control on this, determining that it, you know, because there are a lot of sort of pop-ups mm-hmm. out there. How do you go about determining that this is going to be a quality experience for your child, and it's not just going to be you dropping them off and they're going to sit in a corner for 8 hours and
sure.
Be miserable?
I would encourage the families to talk to the program director or camp director about the day, about any background checks that they do for the staffing, any staff training. There are accredited camps through the American Camping Association, and they have some resources as well. Their website's www.acacamps.org. But I would say also back to the question about camps is ask your kid what kind of things they want to do for the summer. Just having a YMCA background, we had thousands of themed summer camps. And so anywhere mm-hmm. from being a superhero to being a pretty princess to, you know, making movies and cooking and Harry Potter and all the fun stuff, you know, mm-hmm. things that I was like, I want to go back to summer camp for this. You know, equestrian, there's a lot of different things that kids just may not be exposed to. And for me, summer camp's a way to have that exposure just to see if they like some of the different stuff, even traditional camp, being out in the woods in the dirt playing. So
if you're just joining us, we are talking about child care challenges, particularly now during the summer months when children are out of school. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So you start by talking with your child on this, but presumably you do want to investigate the camp, make sure that it's reliable. Let's deal with the fears piece of this first. What are some warning signs that perhaps you ought to look for, you know, in terms of an experience that would not be a good one for a child? Because those are the things parents are most concerned about when they hand their children off. Crystal, I'll start with you.
And I would say looking at even at the beginning of the day, the drop-off, how does drop-off operate? And when you pick your child up, what's your child's reaction? Asking your child about how their day went, what happened during the day, and just staying close and in tune with what's happening over the course of that summer program and just really figuring out what's their schedule, what's their plan for the week, for the month, and for the duration of that summer camp, making sure that it's properly staffed, as I said, because mm-hmm. There can be a lot of times when teenagers are mm-hmm. in charge, and who are the adults that are on staff, and do those adults have the proper credentials in order to be there, and what's the requirement for that summer camp?
Nicole, what are some warning signs?
Well, I think definitely when you pick up for the day, asking your child things like, who was your counselor today? Did they know their name? Did they engage with them? Was your child able to tell you all the things that they did that day? And really listening to your child in terms of, did they say something that seemed concerning? Did they not know the names of any of the adults in the room that day? So some of it is listening to what your child has to say, understanding what their needs are, and could they express that not only did they have fun, but did they feel safe? Did they get to eat when they needed to? Did they have access to go inside if they were hot? And all of those things that as moms and dads, we naturally do for our children, that you're really looking for those adults to do for them during that day as well.
Sarah, what are some warning signs?
Yeah, I would echo what they have already mentioned, but also, like sunscreen checks and asking again, just the layout of the day. What activities are they going to be doing? What's the communication like back to the families from the day, whether it's the kids or the adults talking to the parents at the beginning and end of the day? Again, asking for a tour of even just like the center or the space that your child's in. I always encourage that because you can get a gut feeling as well when you're walking through somewhere, if it's right or wrong, no matter how they're talking about the program. Pop in for lunch. If they're there for lunch, pop in and check the program out for the day. I would always encourage families to come into the summer camp and enjoy the fun because hopefully that's what they're having.
So let me ask, I'll stay with you on this, Sarah. If you're on the other end of this and you're trying to structure a great summer camp sort of child care experience for children, where do you start? I mean, what's that process like?
Well, at first, I think you look at the community and the needs and see, does it need before and after school care? And then for the structure of the day, we always structured from 6 to 9 was your drop-off time. So kids are still waking up, so some quiet activities, getting them adjusted to waking up, maybe having breakfast. 9 o'clock starts the camp day, and so kind of an opening ceremony. You get into your age groups, and you start talking about the day, the rules, the expectations. You have camp activities, which can be outdoors, indoors, making sure there's cool down time, water breaks, sunscreen checks. Could be swimming, field trips throughout the day, more camp activities, because if you promoted that it's a themed camp, you want to make sure that those lessons are coordinated with what you promoted. Coming back for like a closing ceremony, talking about the day, making sure kids are giving feedback about their day. And then usually from about 4 to 6 would be pickup time. So still structured activities, but a little more loose so people can relax.
Nicole, in terms of the 45,000 children you work with, how do you go about structuring what their experiences are going to be?
So those are a little bit different because a lot of those kiddos are coming for a more traditional childcare day, although we certainly have those before and after school time programs. From our office's perspective, you know, we look at lots of things in terms of the structure of a program. We're really looking at a lot of things related to health and safety, whether or not the staff are qualified, whether they have had a background check to make sure that there's no criminal histories, and the training that the staff have had to make sure that they're really highly qualified in terms of providing care and education for those children. So the things that Sarah mentioned are absolutely true. But we're looking at things from a little different perspective in terms of making sure that children are safe where they are and that the adults there are really the right adults to be caring for them.
What sort of training do you require of them?
So it depends on the setting that you're choosing for your child, but all of the staff have to have training on basic things like first aid, CPR. If they're working with infants and toddlers, they have to have training on things like safe sleep to make sure that we're doing all of those activities correctly. Training on child development so that we understand how children learn and grow and what is an appropriate expectation and what's not. And then beyond that, we really do a lot to encourage our teachers in the early education environment to go back and seek credentials, go back to school and seek a bachelor's and a master's degree so that we really can build upon their skills so that children can grow and learn.
Is it hard to find people to fill those roles?
I think we're like every other industry right now, which is the unemployment rate is low, which means it is harder to find staff. But typically we find staff in this space who get into it because they genuinely care about children and believe that they can make a difference in helping those children grow. But always looking for people who are excited to work with our youngest learners.
So is this a challenge, though, across the board, not just for the state, Crystal, but finding qualified people to work at these camps?
Well, I think it's more so along the lines of the individuals who are wanting and willing to improve and increase their level of education, and not really a challenge trying to find the individuals, because we always have individuals willing to come in and help our youngest learners, but encouraging, and it's our role to encourage and help them find the opportunities and resources to increase their level of education around early childhood and child care and education as a whole.
We are talking about child care challenges, particularly during the summer months when many children are out of school here in Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds. They're both from Early Learning Indiana. And Nicole Norvell, who is with the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about child care challenges, particularly now during the summer when school is out and kids don't have a place to be for 8 or 9 hours a day. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds of Early Learning Indiana, and Nicole Norvell of the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration, FSSA. So we talked really about sort of where some of the challenges and what the process is of selecting a place. I'd kind of like to put this in a historical perspective. How have our expectations of what camps for children should be, and I'll go into just a small bit of autobiography. My father for years was a YMCA youth director, so I spent a lot of time at YMCA summer camps when I was a small kid. Of course, you know, they were still sending smoke signals at that point, but to communicate. But, you know, the kinds of experiences and the varieties of the camps now are just so different and so much more vast than they were then. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, what we expect from these experiences in ways that are different from previous generations. I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this, but I'll start with Crystal.
Sure. And I would say, like you, I had the privilege of attending, summer camp at probably one summer, but most of the time we were home because there were three of us and the affordability of summer camp was not an option for us.
I think my parents just wanted to, you know, get me out of the house and make life a little simpler.
But at the same time, it has evolved and changed so much, and parents have expectations. Maybe they want their children to be involved in the arts and STEM and STEAM and robotics. So there are a variety of options now, and parents can really focus and gear their children to their interest most of the time, soccer camp, basketball camp, a lot of camps that cater to an individual's area of or specialty or what they're interested in, and not so much just camp in general where you're just going to camp for maybe a week or two. But there's a lot involved there where it's specialized for that child.
Sarah?
For me, I always like to see the friendships being made because they're coming from all different areas. And I think parents like that too. I think a lot of kids keep connections afterwards, even though they're out of different school systems. They always come back to camp if they've had a really good experience to see those friends that they've made. I would say confidence too. You're in a different area. You're in a different setting. So hopefully some social emotional learning is coming in those settings as well. But friendships and memories and different experiences that you may not get during the school day and that families may not be able to do together, you could have at camp.
Nicole.
So I think from my perspective, it really is about how do you give children the experience that they're looking for in the summer, but how do you keep them learning, right? So we know in the field of education that those summer months, it's very easy for children to lose some of what they learned in that previous school year. And when we look at things like assessment scores and those fall assessments, sometimes you can see where, gosh, being off school for 2 months, we've really lost a lot that we had gained. And so I think summer camps do a phenomenal job of kind of helping kids to learn in a way that they don't even know that they're learning. And I think that is probably a change from where we may have been a long time ago, where we really were just thinking about a place for our children to be that we knew they were going to be kept safe in. And now we've really looked towards, yes, we want them to be safe, but we also want them to be learning so that when they start school in the fall, they are just as prepared as they were the day that they walked out, if not better.
Yeah, has it changed? Because there is this quality of intellectual stimulation, and really what I remember, my parents were involved parents, but their focus, at least in the 1960s, was, okay, how far are you going to make him hike? Are you going to make him swim? You know, basically, how tired are you going to make him before we come to pick him up and so that we can make bedtime a little easier. At the end of the day, and while that's still kind of part of it, it's changed. So, in part because our expectations of education also have changed. So let's talk a little bit about in a practical way, with the balanced school calendars and the shifting school calendar, has that complicated the task of figuring out how you deal with this? It used to be you thought of summer camps as an experience that you had between June and August. And, you know, in a lot of places now, there are 2 or 3 weeks off in the fall, 2 or 3 weeks off in the spring, where suddenly you've got to make decisions like that. Sarah?
And at the when I was with the YMCA, we called those schools out camps. And I know with a lot of our child care centers and even our ministries and homes that have school-age kids, we really try to encourage them to those longer breaks with school-age kids to run it like that. So run it like a summer camp, run it like a full-day program, put a theme with it, make a lot of activities, run it so it's still fun and learning while they're still in school.
Crystal, you look like you wanted to say something.
Yes, and I was going to also say that in addition to what Sarah was saying, it is an opportunity to extend that summer learning, summertime camp, summertime opportunities in those plans that you had for the summer. Maybe they're condensed into 8 weeks now, but you do have other opportunities during fall break and during winter break to still have those same experiences.
Nicole, I mean, with the changing role and expectation of education and, you know, I mean, in some ways, even though I don't think anyone is flatly acknowledging this, you know, the academic calendar year was a product of when we were an agrarian society, and now that we're not an agrarian society, the idea that we need to have young people out to work in the fields during the summer months doesn't make as much sense as it once did. Are there efforts underway to try to figure out ways to integrate many of these camps with school curricula? So that the education is more seamless.
So during the school year, we have a lot of our public and private and charter schools that offer before and after school to families who are working, because most of us who work, right, our day doesn't start at 8:30 and end at 3:30 the way schools do. And I think those before and after school programs are definitely trying to incorporate some of the academic components to extend that child's day in learning. So some help with homework, some specific skill building on academic subjects that they may be struggling with. I think you're seeing that more and more just because it is something that we know our children need. And it also can make the few hours that families sometimes get in the evening at home with their children a little less stressful if they've been able to complete some of that academic work with the support of educators in that before and after school space.
Crystal, I mean, is this something we need to think about, is integrating, because it does seem like the trend is much more to something resembling a year-round school experience where there will be breaks during the course of the year for children to recharge, but that whole idea that you're going to have 2.5 or 3 months off in the summer probably is something that is going to be receding in the rearview mirror at a rapid rate.
And in most early childhood settings, they're already year-round programs.
Yeah.
So typically children, especially in kindergarten, if they've been exposed to early childhood settings, they're used to going to school every day and on a daily basis and making sure that their day is full of activities and there's some scheduled activities happening during that day and a routine set. So the earlier the child is and if they've been exposed to in an early childhood setting, that they've already had the opportunity to experience that year-round setting for the most part.
Sarah, how do you see, as schools change, how do you see camps changing in the days ahead?
I still see summer camp as somewhere you can learn just differently than in a classroom. Could we be more intentional with some of the academic standards and incorporating those into summer camp? Possibly, but I see it as just a totally different program and just a nice way to learn in a different setting out of school. So I think that there are some programs that, and as summer camp, could be more educational. But I truly enjoy the break, and I think summer camp is just a totally different experience that kids are still learning, even socially, how to connect with others and other life skills that maybe they do need that break of that educational break and not having it be such a curriculum. But I do still see it as a learning opportunity.
What makes it different, I mean, from school? Because, you know, a lot of, and obviously I live and work in an educational environment and you know, at almost every level we're talking more about experiential learning and all of that, which in some ways is an idea taken from camp and applied to more traditional academic settings.
What was your question again?
My question is, you know, when you say it's different in some ways, as we see school moving more toward camp, how do you expect the camps to be different from the school experience?
Well, I think for me, sometimes it's the first experience of going to the zoo, getting in a pool, so you're learning swimming lessons at the same time. There's just some different skills during the summer that you're learning instead of what you're learning during the school day. So it doesn't always have to be academical, I guess, if that's, or educational,
okay.
I guess. So that's what I meant as far as different. And for me, I was a camp counselor, and that was one of my first jobs, and I loved it. And I had a group of 6 and 7 year olds and about 40 of them, and at least 75% of them came every single day, every single week. And so even just that bond of learning and teaching them different skills that way felt different than in the school day, because you're out and you're taking field trips and really getting to know them. And I know the teachers get to know their kids during the classroom day as well. I'm not doing any testing or assessing, so I get to truly have fun with them while keeping them safe and happy and healthy, hopefully.
How much of this is the idea that we call it camp rather than school? Because, I mean, one might argue that they're still learning things. I mean, as a former competitive swimmer, I know that swimming is a discipline. It requires a fair amount of rigor, and many of the other outdoor skills that traditionally you learned at camp require a fair amount of discipline and study as well. What is it about this that makes kids think that it is just more fun than traditional schools, Crystal?
In a sense that it's not in a traditional school setting in most cases. In some instances, you have summer camp taking place in school, but it's not in their classroom. It's not at a desk. It's not in the actual environment where they're learning throughout the day. Even though they are learning, we hope there are some educational opportunities built into camp, but at the same time, it's not with my teacher in front of me. It's not in my general classroom setting. So we're hoping that children are able to get out and learn those things and work with their peers, and also building relationships with their camp counselor or some others within the camp setting, and it's outside of the typical school day.
We are talking about child care challenges during the summer months when children are out of school and, you know, finding a good, safe, and productive place for them to be can require some thought and study. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So we mentioned earlier what some of the challenges are, and, you know, a lot of it comes down to finding a place that is in your area that where the hours are good and the experience is going to be good for the kids. Those are the, and that you can afford. Those are the four big ones. As part of that, because area got mentioned first, I think, by all three of you, are there parts of this state where it is harder to find summer camp or summer child care options than others? Everybody is looking at me and nodding right now. But so I'll start with Crystal on that.
So within our agency, we service six counties, Marion and a couple of the surrounding counties, and then several southern counties, which are a little bit more rural. So the options, there are fewer options once you get outside of central Indiana, and they're fewer far between in a lot of instances. And depending on what you're looking for and the time of day that you need care, you may not have many options as far as a summer camp for your child. So it really it depends on where you're looking for care and where you need and what the time that you need that care to happen. So I would definitely say in the more rural areas of our state that care is few and far between.
What are some of those areas, Nicole?
Well, we certainly can give you some detailed information on that, but I would agree with Crystal. It is typically our more rural parts of the state, especially those that don't have a lot of bigger towns or cities around them, right? So if you think about some
Southwest
of our...
Southwest or Southeast Indiana.
Yeah, and even in central Indiana, some parts of central Indiana where you have more traditional kind of farming communities and a lot of small towns that run together can be a little more challenging in finding a variety of opportunities for children. Certainly, there are always some opportunities, but they may not offer all of the ones that your child would be most interested in or that work the best for you. But that's really where the staff at Early Learning Indiana can be helpful. They help to house on our behalf a database that will tell you where you can find various programs and how to get in contact with them and how to ask questions and sometimes even what those programs cost. And, you know, every county has access to Early Learning Indiana, but their own child care resource and referral agency. And that's really what they're there to do, is to help support families in finding care.
I'm going to stay with you for a second, Nicole, and just say, in those places where it's hard to come by, I mean, what do parents do?
Well, I think some of it is how far can they travel, right? That's always an option if they have the ability to do that. And some of it is finding other parents who are in a similar situation and how can you partner together to help each other out, right? Sharing rides and finding ways to make that work. It's something that our office is consistently working on with our child care resource and referral agencies, which is how do we build greater capacity in our communities and how do we make sure that families have a variety of options for their children. But some of it does come down to your own community and what supports are there and how do we help connect you with those so that you can really find something that works for you and your family.
What are, Sarah, what are some creative ways, if you are in one of those places that the options are few and far between, what are some ways that that parents can kind of bridge the gap?
Well, I think talking with your current child care provider and giving them suggestions about the summer. If you already have childcare, but you want to see it beefed up a little bit for the summer or make it more fun, talk to the provider. Ask them if they have plans for the summer or what can you do in the community that's free. There's parks, there's libraries, museums. How can you incorporate the community more into that provider setting if there's not a lot of options? What do the families want to see? What do the kids want to see? So it's just open communication, kind of like what Nicole mentioned.
What are the, you know, when we talk about finding options, what are the options that are in the scarcest supply right now? What are the camps that parents say they would like to see more of and just don't have enough? Anyone?
Well, I think there are options as far as mm-hmm. care is concerned, and a lot of child care programs do offer care for school agers. So that is still an option. So a licensed child care center, an unlicensed registered ministry, licensed family child care homes, they do care for school age children. So that is still an option, as well as some camps. And parents first just want to find a place for their children to go, and then getting down into the weeds as far as specific activities and an area of focus where they want their child to gain more knowledge or more information. That's the second step. So I do believe that there are still options available for children and their families.
We are talking about child care challenges during the summer months here on No Limits. My guests are Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds of Early Learning Indiana and Nicole Norvell from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about child care challenges and options, particularly now during the summer months, when school's out and many children in the state need something to occupy their time and attention. My guests are Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds of Early Learning Indiana and Nicole Norvell from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So I'm going to start, since people are listening to this and thinking, okay, well, we've talked about what some of the options are. Let's talk about things that are going really well. What are some of the most innovative or creative camp or summer child care experiences that you're aware of? I'll start with Sarah on that one. The one that sounds like it'd just be the most fun to do or most satisfying for kids.
Oh, for kids. I thought you meant for, like, I would love an adult summer camp.
Well, wouldn't we all?
But, yeah. That's really hard to say because I think every kid is different. So it really depends on, like, what they're passionate about. Where I may think equestrian camp would be awesome because I love horseback riding and didn't have a horse as a child, but I could go to camp and have half my day spent learning about the horses, how to take care of them, and come back and have a traditional day camp. I think there's creative ways all across Indiana that things are happening for summer. I know there's a lot of partnerships too in different communities as well. So Girl Scouts may come in and teach, some things like hygiene and self-esteem and things like that for girls, or Boy Scouts may come in and teach different things that if you're not a Boy Scout, you could survival skills, things like that during half the summer day and then the other half traditional camp. So it's really hard to say what everything is that's going on out there. If there's a big kid craze, there's usually a summer camp about it, at least with the Y. My favorite one was Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter. So just to see the staff come alive, too, about how passionate, because the staff kind of make the program, too. If they're passionate about it, then it's a totally different experience for the kids. So, seeing them make capes and wands and get very detailed in their imagination was pretty cool as well.
Nicole, what are some of the most innovative ones you're aware of?
So I'll probably take my state hat off and put my mom hat on, if that's
okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Your parents your children are okay with that.
Yes. Yeah. So I have one and she's 10. And okay. I would say, her summer camps have been things like Connor Prairie, where she was able to learn archery and how to fish and build things outdoors, which we live in the city. And so that was amazing for her. She has done equestrian camp, which was really great. She's done a slime camp. So those of you with 10-year-olds will know why making slime is all of the rage these days with that age group. But
I thought that was considered just childhood.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's a whole thing now with slime. But, she has really been able to utilize camp in a way to help her experience things that throughout the rest of the year she doesn't get to. And I think that that's the really cool thing that goes on with summer camps. And I think communities have done a phenomenal job of partnering to make sure that children have various opportunities to learn and grow. And I think there's so many of them out there, it's really hard to probably quantify what the best ones are. But again, I think that comes down to knowing your child and what they are going to find as the really coolest experience that they can have for the summer.
Crystal, some of the most fun and innovative ideas you've seen out there.
I would start with robotics camp. That one is very intriguing to me, and getting young children started in building robots and actually competing on some level. And then also a theater camp. I have two nieces who are into theater and singing and dancing and acting. So theater camp is also another one that's pretty good. And as well as those that are outdoors, so farming. Someone was telling me today about a farming camp that they're sending their children to. So that's can be pretty exciting since we live in the city and there's not a lot of opportunities for us to see how a farm works. So going to actually a farming camp is a good opportunity to see how our food is grown and learn more about agriculture.
Do you have to worry a bit? Because I understand it's important that, you know, it'd be something that the child buys into, you know, and something that your child has an interest in. But again, veering briefly into autobiography, my son has been crazy about baseball ever since he was very, very small. You know, played Little League and has done travel baseball and all of that. And, you know, at periods when he was younger, you know, he would want to sign up for every baseball camp that was out there, and then he'd go and play, you know, at least one or two games, three games a week for his Little League team and, you know, do Sunday showcase and all of that. And as his father, and my wife felt the same way, we worried a little bit and thought, okay, he really loves this. The last thing we want is to burn him out, to take something that is such a great source of joy and satisfaction and turn it into something that he just doesn't enjoy anymore. It becomes, you know, he approaches with feelings of dread. Do you have to worry about that a little bit in choosing these kinds of camp or summer experiences? Start with Crystal on that.
And I would say it depends on the child and on the family and what their interests are and what they're looking to gain out of the camp. And then also camp, well, now, as we talked about earlier, school or the summer is not as long as it used to be. So with 8 or 9 weeks and sometimes less time, hopefully that is not the case. But that is something to be concerned about, and maybe looking into something, the secondary thing that your child may be interested in as far as sending them to a camp. And then if that sport activity is what they're interested in, that could be what they engage in during the other part of the school year. And summer is reserved for something else that they have interest in and can learn more from and about.
Sarah, do we have to worry about burnout? I mean, could you have gotten burned out on equestrian sports when you were a kid? You're shaking your head.
No, not at all. I mean, I think you can. It's just usually, like, the equestrian camp is just 1 week. So yeah, there was enough different variety. And that may not be for every part of the state, but you can kind of pick and choose. So if there is something that is of interest, summertime would be a time to try it. And I couldn't have gotten burned out on equestrian, but in an instance of summer, it wasn't for the whole summer. It was just for a week. Yes, I think some could get burnout if they did a sport camp every single
Hasn't happened with him yet.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
I don't see it happening. But I every kid is different, like Crystal said. So they may get sick of traditional camp, but hopefully they keep it different every day that they don't get burnt out.
How important is that, Nicole, to spice it up and you know, create variety in your child's summer experiences?
I think it's important in their summer experiences, but even in their school year experiences. So what we know about how we all learn, right, is that the more interested and engaged we are, the more that we're learning. And I think that's why for young learners, we try to make every day different in terms of the things that they're learning. So, you know, certainly important in the summer, but important at all times as our educators are thinking about how to engage children that they're working with every day.
We have gotten an email from a listener named Caroline. And again, if you want to join the conversation, by email. You can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Caroline writes, hello, I enjoy listening to No Limits and always find the conversation enlightening. The topic of summer camp is near and dear to me. I attended camps as a child, worked as a camp counselor as a teenager, interned at camps in college, and was a YMCA program director as an adult. I believe in summer camps. They provided me with leadership skills and other soft skills I never would have learned in school, and also lifelong friendships. I value that summer camp can provide an entirely different experience to kids and that it is a break from traditional learning. I think it's important to set aside traditional education for fun and the development of soft skills in an environment where kids are in a community with minimal adult interference. It grows skills that are invaluable. I am excited that my child is now old enough to do camps and look forward to giving him that opportunity each summer. As a parent, this is my first year sending my 5-year-old to camp. What I'd love to see more is the ability to split payments for camps. Only one that we've looked at had the option to put down a payment and pay the balance closer to camp. This can be financially crippling if a family needs to enroll in multiple camps. Crystal, you're nodding your head. This sounds like a real challenge.
And it can be. A lot of times parents don't have the, as our the email stated, don't have the funds to even pay the full amount, or just want to pay a balance, pay on the actual balance of the camp. So it's important to talk to that camp director, that advisor, whomever is in charge, to find out what the options are for paying for the summer camp and finding out if there is a way to pay in installments, if that needs to be the case, or pay a deposit on the camp experience. So that is something that the parents will need to talk to the directors about in getting that communication rolling, and hopefully that is, person is willing to work with that, that family and those families in making sure those options are available.
Nicole, what are there options for families that are on tight budgets in terms of this that might not qualify for say state aid or whatever, but again, don't, you know, they're in that awkward gap?
Sure. So our office helps to administer a fund that is there to support lower income families who are working or going to school. But we definitely know that there are families who may just be above that threshold in terms of qualifying for that funding stream. And that there again is where their local child care resource and referral agency can be very helpful. They really should be able to tell them what are some places that offer a sliding fee scale based on their income. What are places that have scholarships that they can help pay for that child to attend. And locally, we find that our communities are really supportive and helping families who are kind of maybe above the threshold to get some federal or state assistance, but definitely paying for camp becomes something that's really challenging for them. So it really is something that Early Learning Indiana can help with in terms of the call center folks who can guide them, and then your local child care resource and referral agency.
Are there some organizations or entities that are more flexible, you know, when it comes to dealing with finances for parents who are, if not strapped, at least stretched? Sarah, I'll start with you on that.
I can't speak for every organization that I know.
No,
that,
but
that runs,
I'm asking for some, though, that you know.
Sure.
Do work with parents.
I know the YMCA has a sliding fee scale. And previously, since camps do fill up really quickly, usually right after Christmas time, and with money being strapped then too, right after Christmas and the holidays, you could put a small amount down on each week as holding your spot. So it may be a $10 to $20 registration or holding fee that came off of the week payment as the weeks came closer for summer camp. That's the only one I can speak on that knows that, and they provide a sliding fee scale too as well to help families.
Crystal, you look like you wanted to say something.
And I was just going to add and also circle back around to the local resource and referral agency at Early Learning Indiana. We're able to help families locate those programs that may have a sliding fee scale, that may offer discounts. And our Brighter Futures hotline number, we can provide that information.
Feel free to give people the number.
It is 800-299-1627. And they can call in and receive a personalized referral. Someone will talk them through the process and help them decide on what options are available. And we'll give them the information on what options are available and decide on a list of providers that best fit their needs.
I've learned in my time of doing this show, give them the number one more time,
mm-hmm, sure,
because they probably did not have a pen handy the first time and they've grabbed it now.
It is 800-299-1627, and that's our Brighter Futures hotline. And you can also go on to brighterfutures.org for more information.
So are there enough spaces available for, to meet the needs of people who are looking for childcare over the summer months? Or is this still something where, because I heard Sarah say, well, most of these places fill up. And I do remember when we were calling, it's been several years for our kids, that could be a bit of a challenge. If you waited a little bit too long and suddenly you're scrambling to find places, are there enough, Crystal?
There's always room for more, I would say, mm-hmm, because you have different needs for different individuals. So I would say that if you get in early, then of course you have more options than waiting until later. But the sooner the better is always the best choice. But again, I would say that there's always room for more programs as well as summer camps for people to get involved in and to send their children to. So I do say there are options still available, and mm-hmm, childcare is definitely one of those options, and it's not always in a summer camp setting, mm-hmm, but it's another option for families.
And when you say that you should start early, what is the right time to start thinking about if you don't have childcare already set up, if it's basically school and then aftercare at your school or some sort of aftercare option there, when should you start thinking about, okay, where am I going to place my child over the summer? Sarah?
We started summer camp registration in February, so right after the holidays.
Like February 1?
Mm-hmm.
So,
if not after the Super Bowl, maybe. After that big party, maybe that was the summer camp registration. But I remember a lot of families, they'd get so excited to get the camp book or think about camp, because that was kind of a little bit of their Christmas gift, too, is maybe a cool summer camp that they wanted to go to. So we encourage and even encourage the school-age specialists to start thinking about summer camp with their providers February, March, before the school year gets out.
Mm-hmm. And, Nicole, for those families that could benefit from using the services that FSSA provides. Mm-hmm. First, how do they go about accessing and finding out about those services and accessing them? And when should they start thinking about doing that?
So I think the best place to start is childcarefinder.in.gov, as it will allow you to search for the options that are available to you. We have a route to work feature where you can put in where you live and where you work, and it'll show you all of the options on your drive to and from work. I think you should always start whenever you believe you're going to have a need, right? So, and that's sometimes hard to anticipate, but, I think thinking ahead is always good. It gives you better options and you're not scrambling until the end. But even if you are kind of coming into it late, that's really where the information that Crystal provided can be helpful, because those staff there can really help you think about how do we find you something that's going to work for you and how do we find that for you fairly quickly.
What sort of questions do you ask when they contact you, Nicole?
So in the state office, typically they're not calling us to help find childcare. And if they do, then we refer them over to the call center. We get lots of questions around things in terms of how to know if your childcare is licensed, what their quality rating is, those types of things, as families are really looking to identify care that works for them.
Well, that will, I think, have to be the last word, because we are running out of time. I would like to thank my guests, Crystal Givens and Sarah Reynolds from Early Learning Indiana, and Nicole Norvell from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration, for what has been a lively conversation about an important topic, how we care for our children during the summer months when we're working and they're not in school any longer. I also would like, as always, to thank our listeners for joining us. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.